You're listening to a podcast from Grace Church in Salado, Texas. For more information and resources just like this, visit us online at gracesalado.com.
This psalm is our second week to look at it. If you weren't here last week, I can't go back and do everything we did last week. We had a wonderful time of communion together, and we began by looking at this Psalm 34. And this psalm is an invitation. Think about it. If you heard us last week and you heard some of the verses before and you heard what Gary was reading a while ago, here's some of the invitation. Verse 3, come, magnify the Lord with me. Verse 5, those who look to him, radiant. It's an invitation to come and have your life changed, have your look, have your demeanor, have everything about you changed. Their faces shall never be ashamed. So come, look to him, and get rid of the shame in your life. Verse 8, we looked at last week, taste and see that the Lord is good. These invitations, remember, come from a man who's writing this song, King David, who just pretended to be crazy, out of his mind, so that he could be released from the opposing ruler. They released him. Part of his plan was, let me just look a little insane so I'm not threatening that king and so that king will release me. And David clearly points and invites the listeners of this song to God's greatness, not his. David was released. It would be very easy for us to go, man, that David sure is smart. He sure is clever. Man, how brave. What a great plan. He must have thought about that, got all this insight. No, David in this song writes this immediately after that to give all the glory to a great God. He says, taste and see. Come experience. Come and know the goodness of God. Well, what is that taste? Why is God so good? What is it that David is really inviting us to? Then we see, amongst those invitations, we see one in verse 12. Now, and I want us to be honest here. The come and magnify the Lord with me, the taste and see that the Lord is good, those who seek him are radiant. That doesn't sound very practical to us, does it? But verse 12 is an invitation to us. If we were to be honest, we really crave what we're going to see as an invitation of verse 12. Listen to what David says here. What man is there who desires life? Do you desire life? You desire abundant life? You desire life? What man desires life? What man loves many days that he may see good? This is what we're after in our life. In 2017, no matter where we are, we're after these things. We desire life, abundance, vibrant, joy-filled life. This speaks to our desire, our need for meaning, for purpose. What man desires meaning, life, purpose? And he says, what man desires love of many days? This speaks to our desire for hope for a future. We just sang about it in our song. This is the desire that we all have, that when we go to bed at night, we're not dreading to wake up. Which, how many of us would love to go to bed every night knowing that tomorrow is another day, another adventure, knowing that there's a future, an eternity waiting for us? This is a practical invitation for us. Who wants life? Who wants a future? And then he says, what man is there who desires life, who loves many days, that he may see good? Who wants to see something beautiful, good? I mean, really good things. Who's tired of the politics? Who's tired of the religious scapegoating? Who's tired of hurricanes and turmoil and struggles? Who's tired of cancer and disease? Who's tired of just the plagues of our culture in our day? Who wants to see good? Ever since the fall in the Garden of Eden, the first sin. Humanity has craved these things. We've craved those kind of days. We've craved that kind of hope. We've craved that kind of beauty and those good things. We want them. And here's the thing. We were made to want them. And David wanted them. And he discovered the answers to those things. And he writes this song for all who will read it to be invited to this taste, to be invited to this experience. And that's all introduction to what we're going to look at. This chapter is an invitation for us. And throughout this chapter, he makes the case for these things even sweeter by all throughout it declaring and mentioning the many promises of God to some. Look with me at some of these. Verse 4. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He will answer and deliver us from our terror and fear. It's a promise from the Lord. Verse 6, the poor man cried out, and the Lord heard him, and he saved him out of all of his troubles. Verse 7, we didn't talk about this verse last week, even though we read through it last week, just because we didn't have time. But I love this. Listen to this promise. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them. Check that out. The placement of angelic protection is encamped. Literally meaning he has taken up residence next to the one who loves God. He is encamped around you. What a promise. 9 and 10, we see the promise that we will lack nothing. That is really good. Verse 15, we see another promise. The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears toward their cry. This is, listen to this promise. The royal, majestic eyes and ears of God are always watching your path and always hearing your pain. Promise for some. His royal eyes are watching and listening. He cares enough to zero in on your path. He cares enough to listen in on your pain and what's going on. And then in verse 17, reminds us, when the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them. This chapter is full of these invitations, and David makes it sweeter by showing us the promises of God. And then verse 18, one of my favorites in the whole chapter. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted. He saves the crushed in spirit. The promise that his presence is with, that he's close. He's not distant. He's not far off. Everyone else may be repulsed by you. That's right. I said that. Welcome to grace. Everybody else may dismiss you. They may laugh at you. They may curse you. They may seek to destroy you. But the Lord has promised this. He's near. In verse 19, we see another promise. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. Now these promises, that's enticing. Notice the word all throughout here, the title that David ascribes to God. The word Lord. I don't know what it looks like in your translation, but it should look like, if there's the word Lord there, capital L-O-R-D, all caps, L-O-R-D. When you see when the word Lord is in all caps in your translation of the Bible, it is literally meaning Jehovah God. It is the way that we non-Hebrew people are ascribing a name to who the Hebrews call simply Jehovah. It's a big name. It means the existing one, the one true God. He is the one making these promises. Who else can really ever promise these things? will always rescue. I will always deliver. I will always be near. I'm always listening. I'm always hearing. Only Jehovah God. This is our true God. These are some of his precious promises for some. That's right. These promises are for some people. What, Pastor? Did you just say that? Gary was up here and said it's for everyone. Some people say it's for everyone, and some people say it's all. And what's going on here? Well, we're both right. Some? Sounds really harsh, Pastor. Isn't that mean? Isn't all of this, all of these promises for everyone ever? And I want you to hear me. The answer to that question is no. Let's revisit those same promises and look what's attached to these promises. This is important because this is where we're going as we apply this passage to us. God gives these promises. Remember, David's writing this and singing this as an invitation. Verse 7, 9, and 11. The angel of the Lord encamps around who? Those who fear him. He delivers them. Those who fear God. Verse 9, we see the same thing. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack. Those who are fearing God are those who are going to be delivered by God. Verse 11, we see, come, O children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Verse 10, we see also the young lion suffers want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. It is those who are seeking the Lord that are going to be given the Lord. Those who are seeking God, God's going to say, okay, you're seeking me, here I am. Here's these promises. Verse 15, we see again, the eyes of the Lord are toward who? The righteous. And his ears toward their cry. Very specific. Verse 17, we see it similarly. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers who? Them. Out of their troubles. And then verse 18, the Lord is near to who? The broken. The broken down. His presence is with those who are brokenhearted, who have broken spirits, who have broken away. Broke down is broke down. And you know when you're broke down. You know when you're at the bottom and there's nowhere else to go. And guess what? Usually that means there's no one else near you. We don't like hooking our wagons to broke people. God says, that's who I'm hooking my wagon to. The Lord is near the brokenhearted. The humble, the hurting, the poor, the needy, the righteous. We see that here. These are, you could say, for the promises of God listed in Psalm 34, are the conditions. Seeking. Let's just narrow it down to two words or two phrases. Fearing God and righteous. So what does righteous mean? Doesn't that mean perfection, you might ask? Well, let me ask you, if you look at this in context of this, the word righteous, did you notice all the other descriptions here? Broken, poor, needy. Does that sound like perfection? So the link of the promise to the righteous and the link of the promise to the broken, the needy, the poor, the crying, that doesn't match up in our view of what it means to be righteous, does it? Righteous simply means right standing with God, justified. Well, how do I know if I'm righteous? How do I know if I'm justified? Because these promises sound very good. I want that life. I want that hope. I want to see that good. I want these promises. We'll get to that in just a second. The other phrase we see repeated here is fear of God. Fear of God is really coming to the core of those who receive the promises of God. Fear of God is about reverence. It's an attitude that leads naturally to right actions. If I'm afraid of snakes, it's going to dictate actions. If I know snakes are in my territory, I will do things that will cause me and my family to be safe. I will either be proactive, and proactive with snakes means I'm calling somebody, or I'm going to build stuff or do stuff or get a cat or something. I don't know. I'm going to be, because of my fear of snakes, I'm active. When we are afraid of things, when we are afraid of the bully, there are certain behaviors that we do. If we're afraid of getting bullied and we're saying, I don't want to do that because I don't want to get bullied. I don't want to go into that room because that's where that guy is. I don't want to act this way because that person is going to make fun of me. And so what we see all through the Psalms, all through the Proverbs, is the invitation, fear God. Don't fear people. If we fear people, we're going to act ways that aren't glorifying and righteous to God. Fear God and receive the promises of God. Fear people, receive the promises of people. You see what David's doing here. It's beautiful. What an invitation. We fear not being liked. You're going to do things to be liked. And that's what David is saying here. Don't you want to be liked? Don't you want to be in the presence of God? Don't you want that plate to eat from every day? Fear Him. Fear Him. These promises are for those who are righteous and for those who fear God. It's about our attitude that leads to actions that demonstrate who and what we revere. So, David helps us out. Really, the core of this chapter we see in verses 12 through 14. So look with me there. We saw the invitation earlier. What man is there who desires life? What man is there who loves many days? What man is there who may see good? And then in verse 13 and 14, he helps us out. This is what that person looks like. Here's how they're acting. Number one. This person keeps your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Verse 13, we see that. Gossiping, complaining, venting, cursing. They all display that we do not trust and we do not fear or maybe we have this deep forgetfulness that we are in God's land. We forget that we are under the sovereign care of God when we talk like that, which means we don't really fear Him. If we fear the bully, we're not going to be saying things the bully doesn't want. If we feared God, we would not be talking with our tongue evil things, speaking deceitfully. Or it might mean that we have deep resentment for God's truths. So I ask you, how is your mouth? This week, I look at this and I go, whoa, my tongue has not been kept from speaking deceitfully. We'll get to that in a minute. Remember last week we talked about how what comes out of our mouth is really the result of what lies deep within. we saw that David said, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth, verse 1. And then right behind that, verse 2, we see why. Because his soul makes its boast in the Lord. So again, I ask you, what is your soul boasting in that affects the way you tweet, that it affects the way you snap, that it affects the way you speak to others? The second thing we see David say here is, keep your tongue from evil, your lips from speaking. And then in verse 14, turn away from evil. Pastor theologian named John Gill wrote this many, many years ago. He says, this passage, this denotes that evil is near, it keeps close, and should be declined and should be shunned. It is about all sorts of evil. Evil people, evil company, evil things, evil words, evil works, all appearance of evil. And then he reminds us in Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. And by the fear of the Lord, one departs from evil. And so David is saying here, you fear the Lord, watch your tongue. You fear the Lord, you better turn from evil. The righteous person, the one who fears God, the one who reveres God, is not someone that just tolerates evil. It's someone that sees evil, turns his back on it, and in a sense, practices repentance. Practices, I'm turning from evil, I'm turning to God. I'm running to Him because I do not want this. We see so many promises in evil. Evil promises us things. You do this, then you'll get this. It's almost always a lie. But evil has its promises, and God has His promises. And so the righteous person turns from the promises of evil, turns to the promises of God. We see a third thing here. They turn from evil, and they, verse 14, do good. Are you after the good of your neighbors? Are you after the good of your teachers, your bosses, your workplace, your peer group, your school district? Are you after their good? One of our missions is to engage others. We want to do good, even when it costs a lot for you. Are you after their good? Our move to Salado cost us a lot. We were only living 20 minutes away, but what we were realizing is we weren't able to do good in our community. We weren't able to really do good here. And so as a family, each of us moved here. It cost each of us something. And it hurts. It's painful. We had life. We had things going on. We had things we had to sort of die to, get away from, so that we could be obeying and embracing the promises of God to do good here. Let me ask you, husbands, are you doing good to your wife? Do you know that your highest priority of doing good to people is not to your boss, is not to your community, but it's to your wife? In Ephesians 6, you are told that your instructions as a husband, your main priority is to do good to her. It's not to be married just so that you can wait for her to keep doing good to you, or you only do good to her when you get from her and she serves the right meal or does the right things. No, are you sacrificing and doing good for her? If you are not caring to do that, you might just be forfeiting these promises right here for you. Wives, you know I was going there. Do you do good for your husband? I don't think it's easy practically to do good for our children. It's hard work, wives, I know. But sometimes for you moms, it's easier to want to do good for your children. You do not have perfect men that you're married to. 1 Peter 3 instructs you, do good to them. Are you doing good to them? Do good to them. Don't forsake the promises here. We see we are to turn from evil. We see that we are to do good. It sometimes will require sacrifice. And then we see, Paul says here, seek peace and pursue it. The one who reveres, fears, in awe of God, submits to God, and doesn't merely prefer peace, he hunts for it. He looks for it. That's the way Spurgeon puts it. With zeal, he seeks after ways to bring peace into a situation. I love that. When things are corrupt and people are disloyal, you've been offended. Listen, things around you are broken. Are you pursuing peace? Or are you the ready-to-fight guy? Sometimes those with a lot of knowledge of theology are the ready-to-argue guy. Sometimes those with a lot of knowledge and experience in something are the ready-to-embarrass or argue person. We do it by talking down to people, cutting on people, embarrassing people. Don't forsake the promises of God. Instead, God's sending you to those broken places, incorrect statements, not to lash out at them, not to accuse them of wrong. Listen, God knows the wrong. We are agents to pursue peace in all situations. Do you use your social media or your group settings to vent, gripe, complain about people, or to usher in peace? So, the one who fears God, those who are righteous, have these precious promises that we see in this chapter. They are the ones who are willing to keep their tongues and lips from evil, turn from evil, do good, and seek peace. We look at that list, and as I said earlier, who here can do all those things perfectly? Naturally, we get insulted, we get hurt, we start to lose sight of who's in control, and we start to doubt, and then our lips start to say things. And last night, as I looked at this chapter, and I came to that text, and I was like, Lord, what is this chapter doing to me? And he said, Jason, you have not kept your tongue this week. And I look at this, probably like you, and think, how can I redeem myself then? I haven't loved my wife perfectly. I haven't said things perfectly. I don't usher peace at all times. I need redemption here. I need to be redeemed here because I don't want to miss these promises. What can I do? And then we're going to go to the last verse in this chapter. We didn't read it earlier. Sort of saving it for now. Because I don't know about you, but I want the promises of God. I want these things applied to me. I want them for my children. I want them for everybody in this church. But I look at these things I'm supposed to be doing. These are just four things that I don't do perfectly. I need to be redeemed from that. Listen. If you're like me and you need this word, the Lord redeems. I can't even get past that. You don't redeem yourself. The Lord redeems. The Lord redeems the life of His servants. None of those who take refuge in Him will be condemned. Usually, that's amen worthy. The Lord redeems the life of His servants. As I was thinking through this last night and this morning, I was thinking, God, I need redemption. Verse 22 points me to, again, L-O-R-D, caps. The one who's in charge has made a way, Jason, to redeem you. Jehovah God, Lord, sent his son, Jesus, to pay the penalty for your life that you've lived. To pay the penalty for those things that you say that insult. For the way that you've been as a husband to your wife. The way that you've been as a wife to your husband. The way you've been, the things you said about your boss when he wasn't around. Jehovah hears, he sees, and he sent Jesus to die. To redeem you from that. This verse says, if we take refuge in him, we will not be condemned. I picture refuge as this big, open sort of fortress. Recognizing we need redemption, we run to the refuge and the door flies wide open through Jesus. And he says, come on in. And inside here are all the promises that we just looked at. They're for you. The door is Jesus. Come in to the refuge and you will not be condemned. He redeems, not you. So as I looked at this morning and last night, I was thinking, oh God, I am so thankful that yes, the promises are conditions, and really the conditions are that I am in awe of you. Not my perfection, because you redeemed me. When you see me, you see the door of Jesus covering and letting me in. So once again, let's hear these promises. And as we close our time, these are promises for those who want to run to him. Who recognize in these four things they didn't do, you haven't done these well. Listen, for seekers of God, you will find him. The promise of rest. For pursuers of God, you will become radiant. You'll be transformed. For those who adore and revere God, an angelic host is assigned to you, just like assigned to Christ when he suffered on earth, ministering to him, so to you. Wow, Jehovah Lord has standing beside me an angel encamped to help, to provide. And for the brokenhearted, the very presence of God. That's compassion. For those who are aware of their need for redemption, today you need to hear, he will redeem you. Have you ever come through the door of Jesus Christ? Have you ever run to him and said, I'm horrible with my tongue. I'm horrible with my wife and my family, my husband. I'm horrible at the workplace. I'm not doing anything well. Well, it's time to come to Christ and say, Jesus, redeem me. What Gary did when he was young. He hadn't been perfect, but you heard his story. That's what I did when I was young. Not perfect, but I'm redeemed. These promises of God are for me. Will you do that today? My friends in this room, who desires life? Who desires hope for tomorrow? Who desires to see good, then be redeemed by God. Embrace it and take in all the promises of God.